afternoon, and welcome to iWolfs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show hosted by Dr. Ian Dunbar. iWolfs is proudly sponsored by Premier Pet Products and the Kong Company. In this hour, Dr. Dunbar will help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view. Now here's your host, Dr. Dunbar.
Hi, this is Dr. Dunbar's iWolfs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show to help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. So it's hello from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Hello from Dune. Hello from Claude. And hello from Ollie. The topic for today is hyperdog. Unless trained otherwise, dogs, especially puppies and adolescents, are noisy and active. Hey, what else is new? You know, we knew this. We knew this before we got the puppy. We knew this once we got the puppy. And so I think we have to teach the puppy when they can be noisy and active. I think it's a real shame people who approach the young puppy or an adult dog's behavior, and they deal with the noise and activity by always inhibiting the dog, telling the dog, you know, quit it, get down, settle down, be quiet. And this poor dog is just basically never allowed to be exuberant. It's like a, you know, a stuffed dog. And, you know, they want to turn the dog on when they want it, but the rest of the time they want to turn it off. I mean, basically they treat the dog like a VCR. This is such a shame. I think one of the joys of having a puppy is its exuberance, and to see it play on its own with other dogs and puppies, or playing with yourself. It's just a lot of fun. So we have to teach them when they can be noisy. I think here, you know, again, it's time to see things from the dog's point of view. And poor little Theo, he says, poor little grasshopper says to Theo, "Theo, oh wise Akita, why do my owners shout at me when I jump up to say hello? They used to pet me and kiss me whenever I jumped up. What have I done wrong?" Well, grasshopper, you grew. And that's basically it. Poor grasshopper, the poor little puppy, his only crime was that he got bigger. Basically, he was dutifully doing all the things that he was encouraged to do as a puppy whenever he was a puppy, and he ran over and jumped in someone's lap or jumped up and put his little paws on their leg. They would always bend down and pet him. They would always say, "Good little puppy, it's good to see you. This is what I want you to do." And then the dog's 4.5 months, 5 months old, and he runs over and jumps in your lap when you're sitting in an armchair watching the telly with a, you know, cup of tea in your hands, and you're really upset and angry. You know, so I think we want to think about this beforehand, and I would say from the outset, let's just train puppies that the default setting, the only way to greet people is you run up to them and you sit. And the reason for this is if they run up and paw people or bump into them or jump into their laps, when they turn 5 or 6 months, they're going to get into a lot of trouble. For breaking rules they didn't know existed, for acting in a way that they've been trained to act. And this is, it's such a shame. It really is. Then we can tell the puppy, no, we will have times when we play. And these play sessions can be really crazy, and we can have the puppy running all over the place. There's loads of games that we can play with the dog that will give it a chance to, you know, get its energy out of its system so it feels like, you know, settling down again. Sit is such an important behavior here. Obviously, if you have a dog that's, they call it hyperactive. It's actually not hyperactive. It's normally active. So really, we shouldn't be calling this hyper dog. We should just be calling it dog. I mean, that's the way dogs are. They actually like to do things. You know, they don't want to sit in an armchair and watch telly all evening. You know, they want to go out for a walk. They want to sniff this. They want to fetch a ball. They want to play tug. They want to play with another dog. So really, this is normal dog behavior. Sit is a very, very potent command, though. It's pure and simple. You train the dog to sit, and there's so many things it can't do. And I really concentrate with people. And I say, you know, if there's one instruction you want to teach to your puppy, or to your child for that matter, teach them to sit. Because if they're sitting, there literally is a good 100 things that they can't be doing. And all of these 100 things would probably annoy you. So I drafted up a list of things a dog can't do while he's sitting. The sort of expurgated version of this list was published in Dr. Dunbar's Good Little Dog Book. So this is David Letterdog's list of things a dog cannot do while sitting, the top 10. Number one, the dog can't jump up. He can't lick, paw, bump, or goose family members, visitors, or strangers, especially including the young and the elderly. You know, it's just such a shame when you have a six-month-old Labrador puppy and he just runs over to the grandma or to your little niece who's 3 years old and says, "Hello, I'm a Labrador puppy," and boom, they go flat and they start crying. And then the dog gets into trouble. So let's have this sit as the default setting for greeting people. And we train it in from very, very early puppyhood. You could start training it in as early as 5 or 6 weeks if you're the breeder. Certainly that is going to raise a few eyebrows when people come round to look at the litter and the puppies run up to people and sit automatically. With lure reward training, it's very easy to do. At 4 and 5 weeks, that little puppy is so eager to learn. If the breeder hasn't done this, at 8 weeks, you can train it. And when you're hand feeding the dog, make sure it's sit and then piece of kibble. Sit, pet the dog, sit, take the collar, and then a piece of kibble. It needs to be the default setting. Number two, bolt out of the front door of the car. It's such a good behavior to have a dog sitting. We have three dogs, and when they get out of my Jeep, they all want to get out. So dogs sit. And then one dog at a time, clawed outside. And the other two are sitting, so they aren't all trying to bust through the doorway. Three, run off in the park. We actually teach sit as our emergency behavior. If there's one command you're going to teach sit, or down if you prefer, and for border collies and fast-moving dogs, I would say down. But for most dogs, sit. That's it. They're sitting. And so rather than in a play session telling them, come here, which means they have to stop what they're doing, they have to stop sniffing, they have to turn around, they have to schlep on over to the owner, you know, all the way, maybe, you know, 20, 30, 50 yards, and often they can get distracted on the way. Whereas if the owner has sit as their emergency command to check that they're in control, then every 15, 30 seconds or so, they just say, "Rover, sit," plonk, the dog sits, you know you're in control. So the next thing you can say is, "Good dog, go play." And the reward comes from right where the dog is. He can go back to the play session again. So sit is a fantastic emergency command to stop the dog running off, to stop the dog doing anything where he's off leash. And once the dog sits, of course, you have many options. Usually, probably 95% of the time, we say, "Good boy, go play." Maybe the environment's getting a little more dangerous, so we say, "Sit, stay." Or to change it from sit, down, stay. And if, say, you know, a lot of people are moving around in the environment, there's children coming over or other animals, someone on horseback, for example, I will hold up my hand like a policeman, downstay command, something for the dog to look at and focus on as I'm walking towards him, and then I'll take him by the collar, I can put him on leash. So once the dog is sitting, he's proven that you're in control, and then you can release him or go over to him and put him on leash. Number four, if the dog's sitting, he can't chase cars, cats, chickens, children, bicyclists, skateboarders, horses, other dogs. You just watch the dog and say, "Sit." Boom, the dog does it. Number five, the dog can't bully, bother, pester, or disturb people or other dogs. So if your dog, you think it's being a nuisance, you just say, "Sit." I mean, it's really that simple. Rather than getting upset with the dog like, "Oh, leave him alone, leave grandma alone, don't touch it, keep off, which is turned so negative, you just say, "Rover, sit." If you're a high-powered trainer, you can say, "Rover, go to your bed, settle down." It's the same kind of principle. These two behaviors, sit, lie down, it just stops all behavior. Number six, they can't get underfoot, stepped on, or tripped over. This is really important. It's why I usually use sit instead of downstay. If you're on the street and you know, want to stop to talk to someone for a few moments, I usually say sit. So the dog sits, and he's not lying down. Someone's not going to trip over him. But he sits, he's stationary. We know where he is. Number seven, the dog can't mount other dogs. People get so upset by this. Just say sit. End of problem. Or the dog can't be mounted by other dogs. If you're worried about that, just say sit, or sit on it. It'll probably be a more precise instruction. And then it's all under control. Number eight, your golden retriever can't slap a child in the face with its tail, or clear a coffee table of wine glasses with a waggy tail. And this is unbelievable. These big dogs, swish, swish, and the coffee table is just destroyed. Or a child is walking by, gets slap, slap, slap by the side of the face. So we tell the dog, sit. Number nine, the dog can't fence fight or scrap through the garden fence. If you let the dog do this, he'll just gee himself up and get out of control. You know, instead, say sit. Number 10, the dog can't pace back and forth, chase his tail, self-energized by running around like a whirling dervish from window to couch, couch to carpet, carpet to window, you know, working himself up into a feverish frenzy. You simply just say, sit. So there's many, many things the dog cannot do. Additionally, as well as training in a really highly reliable sit or down command, then I would practice the stays. Obviously, if you have a dog which you think is too active, you want to concentrate on teaching your dog sit-stay and down-stay, and especially settle down. Settle down is best taught, say, on the dog's bed, because it provides a very nice cue for the owner, and you say, go to your bed, settle down. And if the dog's body leaves the bed, with just the instruction, go to your bed, go to your bed, go to your bed, now settle down, good boy. And you just keep this up. And if you're insistent, the dog will learn this, and eventually you just say, go to your bed, and the dog will go there and settle down. You do have to remember, though, that you've told the dog to do this, so you should, if you want good reliability, then release the dog. You know, at times, say, when now the activity has ended, your son's friends have all gone through the kitchen and they're outside in the garden, you can then say to the dog, okay, Rover, good boy, free dog. When we look at a dog we think is hyperactive, owners get extremely frustrated by this. And I think one of the most important things is to be representative. We really have to look at the dog's behavior and time sample it. And when we do this, we realize the dog is not that bad. Okay, it's time now for a short break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
From our home to your speakers, voiceamerica.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar. As a veterinarian and animal behaviorist, people often ask me which toy is best suited for their canine companion. Without hesitation, I have recommended the durable and versatile Classic Kong toy. The Kong toy is known as the original canine treat and food dispenser. Simply stuff a Kong toy with any healthy dog food or treat, and you have the perfect training tool. A foodstuff Kong toy will stimulate your dog mentally, reduce frustration and anxiety, and ensure your dog is chewing on something other than your sofa. Find quality Kong products at pet stores everywhere. Your dog will love you for it.
Want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Premier's Busy Buddy treat-holding toys are the answer. Each one is designed to hold a different type of treat, providing hours of entertainment. Squirrel Dude features the patented treat meter, randomly dispensing kibble as your dog plays. The Big Kahuna football includes the patented treat trapper, ideal for hard biscuits and intense chewing pleasure. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer, and be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Bouncy Bone, Tug-a-Jug, and more at Premier.com.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolfs with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolfs. Right before the break, I was saying it's so important to be representative about the dog's behavior. When a dog is energetic The owner's view of the dog is usually very warped, and they will say things like, oh, he's just always bad, he'll never settle down. If you actually objectively time sample the dog's behavior and say, look at the dog every minute or every 5 minutes, and you ask the question, is this dog being good or bad, what you will find is the majority of time the dog is actually being good. And, of course, this good behavior is just going by unnoticed by the owner, because instead the owner is focusing on the dog's bad behavior. So it's so important to be fair to the dog and to be representative and to give appropriate feedback. So I would say, you know, every 5 minutes, you know, set your watch or pager to vibrate every 5 minutes. Look at the dog. Say, we've been a good dog or a bad dog? And if we've been a good dog, you just say, you've been a really good dog, and walk over, give a piece of kibble. This will have an enormous impact on the dog's behavior. Within days, you're going to have a different dog, because now you're really rewarding it for all, you know, the good things that the dog does. In addition, maybe we want to change. We want to move to plan B. You know, when you have an adolescent dog, quite often these lure reward training methods don't work that well. You pull a lure out. Of course, you should have phased lures out by now and got the dog trained, but of course you probably didn't listen, so you still got a lure in your hand, and now the dog is blowing you off. And the dog takes one sniff at that lure and says, you've got to be joking. I mean, why would I be interested in a bit of kibble or liver when I can run over there and chase squirrels? And so we may have to change to a different type of training technique. And probably the best suited for adolescent dogs is what we call all or none reward training. And basically here, we don't give any instructions, we don't lure the dog, we don't prompt the dog, we just wait until the dog does what we want, and then we reward it. I don't know who came up with these ideas. I first saw them actually in my son's Montessori preschool, and I went to pick him up one day, and 30 children are running around outside. I mean, like, it was just scary as a parent. I looked at this level of activity and thought, my word, I mean, how do these teachers do it? And I said, oh, I've come to pick up Jamie early, is that okay? And the teacher, her name was Susan, she said yes, and she turned to a little girl, and she put like two fingers on each hand up either side of her head, and the little girl immediately said, it's rabbit ears. I mean, God knows what rabbit ears is. And she whispered to a friend of hers, it's rabbit ears. And this word spread like wildfire. The kids were all saying, it's rabbit ears, it's rabbit ears, it's rabbit ears. And I'm not kidding, within, I would say, 45 seconds, all the children but one were sitting in a circle around the teacher with their hands in their laps, at perfectly quiet. And this is, it's a great sort of preschool, kindergarten technique, where basically the teacher doesn't speak until everyone is sitting and listening. And I thought, wow, that would be a good technique with dogs. And very, very appropriate when you have a dog on leash who's just bouncing around and pulling on leash and jumping up and not paying attention. You just stand still and wait. And this is probably the best way to teach dogs to walk nicely on leash. It's the best way to train a dog to give you attention. So say you're out on the walk. You just stand still. You just stop. And the dog will sort of strain on leash and look around. And then eventually he realizes we're not moving, and he may bark and strain a little more. Eventually that dog will glance at you. When he glances at you, you say, good boy. You offer him a piece of kibble, and then you walk on, say, five more steps. Then you stand still again, and you don't move until the dog looks at you. This time, you know, a little more than a glance. I want him to glance at you for a number of seconds. And you say, good boy one, good boy two. Give him a piece of kibble, you walk on. Then you stop again. This time the dog has to glance at you for 3 seconds, let's say. And we're going to count it out. We're going to count the seconds out in good dogs. Good dog one, good dog two, good dog three. Oh, here, have a piece of kibble, and we walk on. Now, it doesn't matter how long it takes. The dog will do it eventually. The longest I've waited for a dog to pay attention to me is only about 5 minutes, and these are extreme dogs. Usually after about 30 seconds or a minute, they glance at you. You've got them. You stand still, and basically you don't give the dog any instructions, but the dog has to work out, oh, my owner has stalled. How do I get them moving again? And the only way the dog can get you moving is by looking at you. In one session, after you've stood still, say 12 times in a row, you will have the dog looking at you and sitting. I mean, you haven't asked for a sit stay. You haven't even asked for attention. But this dog will be sitting down and looking at you, gazing in your eyes, just like the dog used to do in puppyhood. So this is basically the all or none reward training technique. For example, if you're going to walk your dog, or feed your dog. You know, if you pick up a food bowl, which of course you shouldn't be. If your dog's this crazy, you should still be hand feeding him. Or you pick up the dog's leash, the dogs go crazy. So what I do instead is I pick up the leash and I say, hey, who wants to go walkie, 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 walkies? I mean, I don't go through this ridiculous thing of saying, sweetie, shall we take the dog for a W-A-L-K? Because, you know, I mean, if you've got a Sheltie or a Border Collie, I mean, they're going to learn to spell in the, you know, just a couple of trials, so that's not going to work. Instead, I pick up the leash and say, walkie, 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 walkies, and the dog can go crazy. I don't care. There's only one thing that dog can do to make me put the leash on, and that is sit and look at me. And I just stand there waggling the leash until the dog does so. The first time you do it is always the hardest, or rather it's not the hardest because you don't do anything, but it takes the longest. But eventually the dog will sit. So we want to get into these reward training techniques. Also, with an adolescent dog, we want to put the problems on cue. I mean, you have to put the problems on cue. Whether the problem is the dog just goes crazy. I mean, he jumps in the air and barks. Whether the problem is just barking. Whether it's pulling on leash. Whether it's jumping up. That all of these behaviors we want to have on cue. So that we can teach the dog, you know, there's times when it's appropriate to jump up. For example, when I used to travel to lecture, I would be spending like 220 nights a year in hotels, and I would come home pretty tired from lecturing to veterinarians and dog trainers, and always get home about 1 or 2 in the morning. Everyone in the house is asleep. No one really cares I've come home, but Phoenix did. She was always there at the front door to greet me. Well, I'm arriving in my lecture suit, you know, a gray suit. I don't want a Malamute jumping up to say hello. I'll look like a Yeti. On the other hand, I want to greet her. I'm glad that she's there to greet me. It's one of the reasons I have a dog. She always welcomes me home. So I'd say, Feeny, sit. And I would take off my jacket. I would actually also take off my trousers. I would fold them neatly. Then I would say, Feeny, give us a hug. And she would jump up and give me the longest hug, and I would pat her, and it would just feel good to be home again. So by putting jumping up on cue, now there are times when the dog can do it. In fact, there's times when we want the dog to do it. Same thing with barking. You have to have barking on cue. You literally do. If you don't have a dog that barks on cue, you are never going to realistically teach him to shush. This is why in the canine games, one of the 9 games that we play is the woof relay. And it's basically a team of 5 dogs, and each dog has to woof 3 times and then shush. And it's a timed relay. And when we interview these people in the arena and say, wow, it's incredible, you know, how do you train the dogs to do this? And everyone's listening. And do you have any barking problems with your dog? Oh, no, because the dog knows shush. Why? Because the owner took the time to put what was a behavior problem, barking, to put it on cue. Now it becomes a trick. And a funny one. I mean, with kids, I had an owner once who trained their dog to vocalize, like, woo, 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 woo. And the cue was, the owner would ask the dog and say, hey, Black, what do you think of the present political situation? And Blackie would say, woo, 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 woo. And kids used to find this just so funny. So Someone have a question here, which is, how do I feel about electronic bark collars and citronella collars? Well, these are two completely different pieces of equipment. Electronic bark collars, I hate them. I mean, I think the concept of shocking a dog for vocalizing is just not on. I mean, that's what dogs do. And to me, you know, it'd be on par with putting a shock collar on a canary for singing, or a baby for crying, or say on a Welshman for singing in the shower. I mean, that's what Welshmen do. They play rugby, they sing, they do it very well. And to just say you're not going to vocalize ever again, it's like, why on earth? You know, so why would we put one on a dog for barking when there's so many alternatives, like teaching woof and shush on cue and all of the Home Alone protocols that we discussed a couple of weeks ago? Of course, another alternative is citronella collar. I think these are wonderful. You know, woof, tss, it squirts a little bit of citronella smell and the dog stops barking. And these collars are very, very effective. However, I would change the odor from citronella to cheese or steak or liver. Some people think that the hiss is meant to startle the dog and the odor is meant to be offensive. Personally, I don't think the collars work that way at all. And now, of course, if the dog is frightened by the collar, then that's a problem. But it's not a problem with the collar. It's a problem with the dog's socialization. I mean, you know, if the dog is frightened of or the smell of citronella, we can't have the dog sort of jumping out of his skin every time there's a weird noise on the telly or a strange odor. I think the collar works like this. Woof, and the dog says, "What's that? Hmm, that's an interesting smell." And, of course, sniffing and barking are mutually exclusive, so the dog cannot bark. I tested these collars extensively, and I replaced the citronella odor with a liver odor. And you can actually get an odorless version, which I would recommend, unless, of course, you're in, you know, mosquito country where it's good to have citronella. But with the liver, it then goes like this. Woof. Tss, what's that? Oh, wow, what a lovely odor. That's incredible. So now the smell of the liver stops the dog barking and rewards the dog for stopping barking and being quiet. And when I tested these out, when I used the liver odor, they were much, much more effective than an odorless variety or a citronella collar. But regardless, these collars are just much more effective than shock collars, which I really don't like. So another alternative is put a citronella collar on your dog and then get control of the barking behavior. Well, it's time again for another break, so I shall be back in a couple of minutes.
Conversation at a click of a mouse. VoiceAmerica.com.
Looking for the world's most versatile and durable dog toy? The Kong Company established the standard for dog toy performance and durability. The legendary red rubber Kong toy is recommended by the world's top veterinarians and dog trainers. A tree-stuffed Kong toy is the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. Kong toys are available at pet stores worldwide. Get your Kong today. Your dog will love you for it.
Do you want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Check out the newest products in Premier's Busy Buddy line. The Bouncy Bone combines rubber, durable nylon, and replaceable rawhide rings for extended playtime pleasure. Fill Tugger Jug with treats or kibble, and your dog will be regularly rewarded while playing fetch or tug or just rolling it around on his own. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer. And be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Twist and Treat, Squirrel Dude, and more at Premier.com.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolves. Before the break, I was talking about citronella collars. I really feel very good about using these for dogs that bark excessively if the owner is away from home. Some people ask me, you know, will the dog bark just to activate the collar if the smell is pleasant? And the answer is no. It's kind of difficult to explain this in a short program. But basically, a reward reinforces behaviors as we go back in time. So the most recent behavior is maximally reinforced. And if you just go back half a second or 1 second, the power of the reinforcement is drastically reduced until, say, after 2, maybe 3 seconds, there's zero effect of the reward in terms of reinforcing the behaviors. So if we look at the timeline and the dog is barking, woof, 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 and then he smells the liver odor, or we could be saying shush and presenting liver odor. The dog is barking, he then stops barking, he's then sniffing quietly. If he just sniffs for 3 seconds, at that point, the maximum reinforcement is reinforcing the dog for being quiet. Minimally reinforcing is reinforcing the dog for stopping barking. But there's very little reinforcement for the dog barking. So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but dogs don't really have the deviousness to say, oh, I'm going to bark so I can get this collar to go off because I really like it. Or I'm going to bark so that I'm going to get the owner to say shush and present liver. It doesn't work that way. The dog, on the other hand, will bark to get attention because there the timeline's different. Woof, woof, woof. Oh, will you be quiet? That's immediate reinforcement for barking. But if on the other hand we have woof, 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 thank you for barking, now shush. Oh, good shush. There's a really good shush. Good boy, here's a piece of liver. Then it won't happen. You will train the dog to be quiet. Now, one of the major activity behaviors we're actually going to talk about, I think it's next week, pulling on leash. We're going to have a whole week on that. So, you know, we're really talking about jumping up, barking, and what I call living room agility. You know, you see us a lot with little dogs, or although my Malamute used to do it, that he would go, woo, 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 jump over the couch, you know, pushing up the carpet on the process, straight through the kitchen room door, which he had opened with his head, boom, out the back door, round the redwood tree, in the back door, boom, in, over the couch again, skidding on the carpet. He'd do this like 3 times in a row, and then he'd go, whoop, and he'd then settle down quietly for a couple of hours. And this was his little message, basically saying, don't you think I need a walk? I don't think we've had our daily walk yet. So we need some kind of replacement for this dog behavior. I always think that when you look at a dog, you know, from an ethological perspective, which all it means is looking at the dog in his own environment, and in this case the environment is the domestic environment, you look at what the dog is doing, and that essentially is what the dog wants to do. And so the best way to deal with things is say, yeah, you can do that stuff, but we do have certain times to do it. So, for example, if they want to do living room agility, hey, go and join an agility club. I mean, dogs love this stuff. And as a bonus, this is going to give you off-leash control. I mean, you have to have off-leash control or else your dog's jumping all sorts of equipment and you're running a different course on your own and looking pretty silly. Flyball's another great one. And, of course, in flyball, they don't care if the dogs bark there. I mean, the dogs are all barking like crazy. Personally, I think it's a waste of energy. You know, if they're barking, then, you know, they're wasting energy, which they could use on running the course, jumping the hurdles and getting the tennis ball and bringing it back. So, you know, go out and get into some activities where your dog can have fun. You know, weight pull, obedience competitions. You know, if just the basic AKC obedience, it's just brilliant. I mean, I had so much fun doing that, and I ended up with a better dog. At the lowest level, you're doing your CD. It's called companion dog. And that's actually what you get. You get a better companion dog when he actually understands words like come, sit, stay, down, stay, heel, and so on. And so that's really well worth doing. But above all, you know, it's a night out for the dog. And this is the thing about when dogs are active, a lot of people think it's lack of physical exercise. And of course, physical exercise is good, but if you look at a dog living in an apartment, they are very good at exercising themselves with their stretching exercises. I mean, they do a kind of like a form of doggy yoga, and they keep their muscles and their tendons and their ligaments and their joints, you know, really very, very healthy. What they're really missing is the psychological exercise, and they need this. They need a walk around the block. They need just going outside the front of the house and sitting there on your porch. I mean, sit there, have a cup of tea, and let the dog be beside you and watch the world go by. You will find this will do an awful lot to keep the dog calm. A lot of people just get into the routine, like think exercise is everything. So they exercise their dog, they jog with it. Well, of course, what you're doing here is you're training your dog. And, you know, you get by first, the dog's okay, you run him 3 miles and he sleeps a day and a half. But after you've been doing this for 2 weeks, now you have to run him 8 miles. And soon you're doing half marathons. And the dog just needs more and more and more physical exercise because he's fitter and fitter. So I always like to go the psychological exercise route. And I want the dog to feel fulfilled that he's doing things that he enjoys. So now he feels like he wants to settle down. There are games you can play. And one of the most important things, I think, is object infatuation. And I like to mention the sponsors of this program again, the Kong Company, Premier, Pet Products. They just come out with some brilliant products, which is why I asked them to sponsor this program. And you want to focus the dog on these chew toys and tug-of-war toys. And I have 6 favorites, and I mention them all the time, and I mention them because they're good. They're my favorites, not because they are a pretty color or what have you. They're my favorites because they really work. And the best 2 products for stuffing with moistened kibble and freezing are, I think, the classic Kong, the original Kong, and Squirrel Dude. Products for stuffing with smaller treats, a little bit of freeze-dried liver or 1 or 2 pieces of kibble or biscuit, Stuffable, and then the big kahuna, the football. And then the biscuit ball is brilliant for stuffing with raw diet, people who like to feed the dog raw food and sort of gloop. It goes in better and freezes nicer. And then the tugger jug is great for just stuffing with dried kibble. We then want to think about a couple of tug toys, which can be used as fetch toys too. And I like the Cool Kong. This is the blue Kong on a string. It floats, so if your aim isn't too good and it lands in a lake, it'll float, and you can swim in and get it if the dog won't. Of course, tennis tug. And you want to get the dog absolutely focused on these toys. Once the dog is focused on the toys, they have so many uses. And fetch or tug, in the park, you now have a reliable off-leash dog. First you play these games in the living room, then you play them in your backyard, then you play them in a friend's backyard. So you get used to controlling the dog's behavior. And it's basically come here, sit, off, take it, tuck, 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 good boy, tuck, 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 Rover, sit, thank you, and the dog then releases the tug toy, and then maybe you use the tug toy as a lure to do a little obedience, maybe heel, sit, so you have the tug toy in your left hand, off, heel, good boy, waggle it a little, and then put it to your right hand to signal the dog to sit, and then we can give the tug toy to the dog again as a reward. Sit, good boy, off, and take it, good boy, tuck, 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 tuck. I mean, this is the way to train the dog. It's a blast, it's a great game, it's a good upper body workout for the owner. Even with a little dog like a Jack Russell, I mean, you try lifting him off the ground, and you're really going to, you know, keep fit yourselves. And we teach the dog lots of rules. And the rules of tug that we use with the tennis tug, firstly, choose just one toy. Choose just one toy to play tug. I don't want the dog playing tug with your trouser leg or a little girl skipping rope. Choose one toy. Now, rule number 2, before playing tug, first teach your dog off, take it, thank you. And I would do this with a non-tug toy, you know, such as, say, a Kong or a Squirrel Dude. Rule 3, the only way the game starts is if you instruct your dog to sit, so he's in a sit stay, and then you say Rover, or your dog's name, take it. And then the dog may never initiate the game if he sees the toy. If you do, you just say, finish, or it's over, you put the toy away, and that's it. If at any time the dog's teeth touch your skin, hair, or clothing, immediately say off, and time out for a 1-minute penalty. I like to put, we have a little penalty area in our yard, and I actually make the dog lay down for a 1 minute penalty, and then I'll play with the other dog. You know, it's just like hockey. You sort of infuriate the player in the penalty box. If the dog leaps or lunges in an attempt to retake the toy, finish, end of the game for the day. And most important rule, stop the game every 15, 30 seconds. Rover, sit. Thank you. Oh, there's a good boy. Maybe give the tug toy straight back to the dog, or do a little obedience using the tug as a lure and then a reward, then give it back. You burn a lot of energy playing tug, but you're also going to burn a lot of your energy, and it's often too much for some people, so let's play fetch. And both the tennis tug and the cool kong are brilliant for this because they have a rope. Do be careful with the cool kong. I mean, this will fly through the air or go 100 yards, and it is pretty heavy, so you don't want to hit a passerby with it. But send the toy. It's very easy to throw. You sort of wind up your arm like a pitcher, and whew, this thing flies through the air. Dog brings it back. Dog sits before you take it. Then you take it, do a little obedience with it. Dog sits again, and you throw it. If the dog barks at you, just wait for the dog to stop barking. It's as simple as that. Use the reward training routine again. So let's play these games with the dog. Tag is another absolutely brilliant game to play. Come here, sit, stay, then I tap the dog on the head and say, tag, and I chase the dog. And I start off doing monster walks, then chase the dog all around the garden, around the tree. They love this game. And every 15, 30 seconds, you say, good boy, Rover, sit. Come here, and you just stand still till the dog comes. Because initially the dog will still be playing tag. You stand still, you wait. Eventually the dog will come, hold out your hand, give him a signal to sit. When he sits, take him by the collar. Good boy. Kiss him on the nose, give him a treat, then pat him on the head and say tag again. This is a brilliant game to burn energy, and you can play it indoors as well as outdoors. Well, it's break time again, so I shall be back in a couple of minutes.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Kong Dog Toys are praised by owners and trainers alike for quality, versatility, and durability. The world's top veterinarians have recommended the original Kong toy for over 30 years. Kong has become the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. The key to successful Kong training is to insert healthy dog food or treats into the Kong toy to entice your dog. Look no further than Kong's Stuff and Brand Dog Treats, perfectly designed to fit Kong toys. Available wherever pet supplies are sold. Your dog will love you for it.
Walk with me and put an end to frustrating leash pulling, lunging, and jumping forever. Premier's Gentle Leader Head Collar has been delivering immediate, gentle control for years and has long been the number one recommended head collar endorsed by vets and trainers. Dogs love it because the unique design doesn't choke and eliminates any pressure on their throat. Pet owners love the Gentle Leader because it allows them to enjoy comfortable walks and a more satisfying relationship with their pet. Want to join the millions of dog owners that have found the secret to stress-free walks? Ask about Gentle Leader at your vet, trainer, or pet retailer.
Welcome back to iWolfs with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar. We're back with iWolfs. We're talking about games to burn off energy when you have a dog that's active. We use the stairs. In our house, we have a public staircase down to the park, and it's 168 stairs. And so I'll go down about 100 stairs, and we call our dog. If say it's been a cold day, like recently we were both sick and we didn't walk the dog, so we went out, bundled up, called the dog down the stairs, keeping him moving slowly, but then powering him up the stairs. And basically, our American Bulldog, he can do 5 reps on the stairs. He now wants to lie down for a couple of hours. It's a huge workout. The only drawback there is then I'm 100 stairs down and I have to walk all the way up. But hey, the things we do for our dogs. Another important thing, dance with your dog. This is so much fun in the evening. Put on a nice record and just do a routine with your dog. Have him back up, have him come to you, have him circle round you, have him go through your legs in figure of eights. Even have the dog stand on his hind legs if you've got a big dog like a Malamute or a Rottie, and you can waltz with the dog. It's great exercise to do, and you're getting the dog to pay attention to you. You're going to have a better trained dog, and he's going to be more reliable off-leash. Most important exercise, though, is jazz up your dog and settle him down. And in adolescent classes at Serious Puppy Training, this is the first exercise we do with adolescent dogs. We come in with 12 dogs on leash, right? Have them go crazy. And we jazz them up, then settle them down. We time how long it takes to settle down all 12 dogs. Then we do it again. Then we do it again. By about the, you know, 6th to 8th time, we jazz them up. They jump in the air and woo, 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 and settle them down. And all 12 dogs settle down in less than 2 or 3 seconds. So now the owners learn what they came to class to learn. You know, and this is important because in many dog training classes, they won't let the dogs get out of control. Well, if the dogs don't get out of control, how can we teach the owners how to control the dogs when they're out of control? So, you know, we have to, you know, put craziness on cue, and then it becomes so much more controllable. It's the number one reason why the owner came to class. So, you know, what do we learn from all this? I think, firstly, your dog has to be active at certain times, so let's formalize these times. And, you know, one of the easiest ways to do this is put the problems on cue. I think it's important to pick your battles here, though, that a lot of owners will sort of mindlessly mumble to their dog and nag, you know, and the dog can't tell whether they mean it or not. And so I like to teach owners to signal to the dog in a single word whether this is a suggestion, a command, or whether it's showtime. And so, you know, as T.S. Eliot might have said, a dog should have three different names. And these signal to the dog your level of seriousness, you know, dog con one, dog con two, dog con three. And so for my dog, Omaha, his three names were Om, Omaha, and Wahoo. And if I called him Om and said, Om, come here, it means, hey, good buddy, you know, if you came over here, be cool, but if you don't want to, don't. And I remember when I first presented this at the Northern California Golden Retriever Club at their annual banquet, I gave a talk, and they said, you let your dog disobey you? And I said, well, sort of, yeah. I mean, doesn't everyone? you know, this is what we do most of the time when we're not paying attention, so I just formalize it, that if I call you by your nickname, Om, you don't actually have to do it. See, if I wanted you to do it, I would say, Omaha, come. And that means, Omaha, come. It means stop what you're doing, move from where you are, come over here and sit in front of me. It's a formal command. So just by changing his name, he knows whether I mean it or not. And then we have another level for if ever I took him on the telly as a demo dog. I did that once and it was a disaster. And so I taught him that, hey, if I call you Wahoo, what it means is, this is showtime. Please, just for 1 minute, listen to what I say and look snazzy. I mean, look like you love me, look like you're really well trained, try and impress people. It's only going to last for 1 minute and you're going to get really heavy duty rewards for this. You'll find a lot of married couples do this. You know, you'll see, you know, a married couple, they're out at a dinner party and all of a sudden the wife turns to her husband and says, sweetie, immediately he knows she's serious and he better shut up. My sister's actually brilliant at this. With one softly spoken comment, she can cause the five men in her life, her husband, her two sons, and her two brothers, to just freeze in fear. They know, shut up, it's serious. You see, many parents do this with their children. You see it a lot in, say, bilingual families where Johnny is at a store and he's about to pick up some valuable vase or something and mum says, Johnny, don't touch that. Johnny, put that down, Johnny. John, I said, put that down. He still knows, of course, she's not serious until it says, Juan Castillo, pick up those pieces right away. When she suddenly changes to his formal name, Juan Castillo, and says, you know, speaks in Spanish, he knows she's serious. So this is a great way to communicate to your dog. Let's have these three levels. You know, when we're kind of loose, you know, we're living with the dog. That's 96% of the time. You don't want the dog to be on sentry alert every day. You know, sit, down, heel, down this. You want the dog to relax. Like, come here. Oh, no, I'm tired, Mum. I don't want to come on the couch. You know, I'm lying on the floor. It's okay. But if you say the dog's formal name, now the dog has to do it. And all you have to do is to be cool, calm, and insistent. So I think the second thing we learn from this is put the problems on cue. And this is Murphy's Law in dog training. If you want to teach the dog to do one thing, then teach him to do the other. You know, I remember once I was up in the mountains with my Malamute, who, when we were in obedience competition, he would heel He would always inch forward until he was 2 feet ahead of me, which, of course, is 2 feet too far ahead. And so I was up in the mountains, and we were skiing, and basically I was with my little kid, and my kid then wanted to, you know, ride in the sled. So I had Omaha pull the sled and took off my ski, sat in the sled, and said, "Go on, Omaha, pull," and he didn't move. And there's nothing I could do was to get that dog to pull the sled. And it occurred to me, here I have this dog that pulls on leash when I don't want him to, but when I want him to pull, he won't. Why? I've never taught him to pull on cue. So we went down to Oakland and the flatlands, and immediately I took him outside. I went, he'll sit, really staccato heeling. Then I said, "Go on, Omaha, pull." And I let him pull me. And we went flying around the block. I remember this. I was wearing clogs and shorts and smoking a cigar, and he's pulling me around the block. And then I said, "Sit, heel, sit, heel, sit. Go on, pull me." And I alternated pull and heeling. All of a sudden, we had brilliant heeling, because now he understood the difference between pulling and heeling. So with children, again, in I would say, you know, this is, you have to put silly time on cue. You have to. And it's so simple. You say, "Hey, you want to play silly time?" And they say, "Yeah." You say, "Okay, are you ready?" And they say, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." You say, "Wait, it's not time yet. We wait till the big hand comes around at 12. Let's sit down." And now you've got all the kids sitting quietly. It's absolutely brilliant. And then when the big hand hits 12, you say, "Right, everyone be silly for 15 seconds. And you're silly and you jump around and what have you. And then you say, "Right, silly time ending. 3, 2, 1, back to normal, Jamie." I remember once I was giving a lecture in Scottsdale in Arizona, and we went out to a real restaurant in the evening with my son, who was 5. And I thought, you know, it's a real restaurant, and he's got to be, like, quiet for, like, 45 minutes or an hour. So as we were walking up to the restaurant, I said, "Jamie, turn into silly Jamie." So he made weird noises, and he bunny-hopped along, you know, the corridor, and then he rolled up to the door of the restaurant, and he hit the feet of the maitre d', who said, "Yes." And I said, table for two, please." And he obviously didn't want us there. It was a very high-class restaurant. So, you know, he walked off to try and find us a table, probably in New Mexico or something. And he came back, and the only table there was in the middle of the room. As he came back, I said, "Silly Jamie, back to normal Jamie." And Jamie stood up, and he was totally normal Jamie, and he remained so for the hour. So we got to put it on cue, then we can manage it. I was going to tell a joke. I actually only know one joke. I just can't remember jokes. And this I learned in Denmark. And it was a man who was going to a convenience store to get some milk with his German Shepherd in the car. And his German Shepherd had a seatbelt on in the front seat and drives to the convenience store. And then the guy parks the car and he undoes the seatbelt and he wants the Shepherd to lie down, you know, in the footwell. And he says, you know, "Down, down, get down. Down." So from outside the car, you sort of see the Shepherd's ears descending as the Shepherd disappears from view. And the Shepherd lies down, and the man walks away from the car, and he's saying, "Stay, stay, stay." And a little lady's walking by, and she says to the man, she says, "You know, I just find it so much more convenient if you set the handbrake." So this is Dr. Ian Dunbar. You've been listening to iWoofs. Thank you. You have been listening to Dr. Dunbar's iWoofs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show that helps you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. iWoofs is sponsored by Premier Pet Products and by The Kong Company. So it's goodbye from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar, goodbye from Dune, goodbye from Claude, and goodbye from Ollie.